about your shadow remus. Kirk, you think I'm wrong in this assessment that not only do very few individuals practice satanic rituals, that those who actually practice satanic rituals probably don't even know Satan, because that's the last thing Satan wants is to be known as the adversary. He wants to be God.
I've got a couple of comments about that.
Just, okay, please.
There, obviously, there was, if you live in California, for any length of time, there was a guy called Anton LaVey who ran a Satan church in San Francisco,
right.
And they were
mm-hmm.
real Satan worshipers, but that was kind of a little mm-hmm. anomaly, or, you know, just a little racket going on.
Right.
And I don't think, my true thought is I don't think it takes very much to offer a politician to get your way.
No.
Without, you don't have to bow down and worship me every night. You know, what do you want?
Right. Yeah, what do you want?
However, having said that, we do know that Muhammad was possessed.
Right.
Although he's a regional small guy when he started, so he never became, mm-hmm. you know, a big world leader, nor did Paul. Paul was
also a solitary
figure. He's a very,
right.
you know, he was possessed, but a very solitary figure, and not on the world stage at the time. However,
right.
if you ever take the time to read a book called, I think it was Sword of Destiny, it chronicles it was written by Adolf Hitler's high school friend, or
mm-hmm.
young boy, and he talks about the religious experience of Satan worship that Hitler participated in, and when he was in Austria, you know, before he was trying mm-hmm. to go to art school. I wish he'd gone to art school.
The guy that rejected him from art school.
These damn right. art critics, you know.
Yeah, damn art critics. Yeah, I'll never respect art critics for that.
Yeah,
we're laughing.
Never again.
Yeah. 50 million people dead because of the art critic. Yeah.
But they are. It can happen, but I don't see American politicians and European politicians. They're out for money and power and ego. You know, it just don't require it. They're not going to do that. And Satan wouldn't.
Yeah, I think actually, so I'm going to go as far as to say that I think very few people are demon possessed, and very few people empowered are demon possessed, and very few people empowered think of themselves as being in league with Satan. Their ambitions are selfish. They're similar to Satan's ambitions. They, like the emperors of Rome, they want to be worshipped as gods. And that's why Obama didn't say, I am outraged or appalled. He said the world is, because he wants to speak for the world. That's the ego of men. Men are driven by selfish, controlling, egotistical instincts, and so it's just that it happens to mirror what Satan wants. But there are people who are demon possessed. I think they're few and far between. I personally think that Hitler was probably demon possessed. The SS rites, while they are occultic, they were not designed to be Satan worship. They were really designed to follow the Babylonian rituals of years gone by, and they had a lot of Kabbalah mixed into them, which is Jewish spiritualism. And so I don't think there's any rabbi, when they're engaged in Kabbalah, thinks that they're worshiping Satan, even though the whole mindset of Kabbalah is satanic. So I don't think that they even know they're worshiping Satan in these rituals, but they've created a god that is modeled after Satan. If you look at the Freemasons, the god, the deity of the Freemasons is modeled entirely after Satan. Allah in Islam is modeled after Satan. But it's not Satan saying, worship me as Satan. It's Satan saying, worship me as God.
Now, Adam Weisskopf, did he know that?
That's a really an interesting question as to how Adam Weisskopf is one of the more interesting characters, in that he established what we now call political correctness. He began it in universities, which is where it took root around the world. He was the one that countered this integration of church and state and created the mindset that became what we know as America. He had huge influence over Jefferson because of the Jacobins in France, and had enormous influence over George Washington and Benjamin Franklin because of his rewriting of morals and dogma and the codes of Freemasonry.
And they were the Masons, right?
Yeah, so he had a huge influence on the world as we see it today. So there's certainly, if you were to pick somebody to say...
Yes, but he certainly knew what's going on, how to manipulate that.
Yeah, I don't think it does Satan any good to possess your Joe Blow, like the Exorcist movies where some little girl is demon-possessed. And I think that is so remotely rare as to be laughable. And the exorcisms that are performed by the Catholic Church are such a joke. But there are individuals over time. Like, I would think that it's a high likelihood that the Roman emperors during the time of Yosha, particularly Claudius, Caligula, Nero, I think that those individuals would be perfect targets, and their behavior certainly seems to reflect that kind of persona. So. Yeah, I think there have been some,
and they've had a huge influence,
but not very many.
No.
They've been actually demon possessed. And by the way, you don't have to perform a satanic ritual to be demon possessed.
No,
it's it happened to Paul, it happened to Muhammad, and neither were engaged in satanic rituals. Although Paul probably was involved Muhammad probably was involved in the satanic rituals at the time.
Now, I don't think he was smart enough to know half of the stuff he was doing anyway.
Yeah. Her next question deals with alter egos. Beyonce has, is Sasha Fierce. Mariah Carey, as she says, has an alter ego. These alter egos are out of, and many times it's an out-of-body experience, becoming very prevalent, very chic. I don't know how much you've paid attention to them or if they even make their way on your radar screen, but alter egos and out-of-body experiences are really becoming the rage if you're going to be in the in crowd today. And I think that I think most are faked, mm-hmm. and those that aren't faked are really troubling.
Well, the I don't really keep up with these guys. These performances and stuff today are really uninteresting to me at all.
Yeah, but, I wouldn't know Beyonce if she walked around.
I might recognize the face, but I mean, it's...
I might not though. I might not. I don't follow.
I couldn't sing three notes of her first song. I mean, for what it is. I mean, but in Buddhism, when you're meditating in the yogas and they try to reach a higher plane, that sort of thing,
right.
you can meditate
mm-hmm.
yourself right into that sort of thing. So it's
you can meditate yourself into an out of body experience. That is absolutely true.
And the American Indians, your folks, they used to dance around, right before Custer's last stand, there was a great big meeting, and they danced for almost a week, until you drag yourself into a frenzy, or certainly into an altered state.
That's true. And it's also true that drugs, to a large extent, create an altered state of reality. They're mind-altering. And you could probably even make a claim that all the psychiatric drugs that we're providing today could have that.
Probably have
that kind of an effect, yes.
Yeah, but you don't want to be in an altered state.
No, I kind of like the state. I mean, I like the world.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of...
I want to be in the state of California, but I don't want to be in an altered state.
Yeah, that's right. Unless it's Yahweh that's doing the altering, and, I'd just as soon opt out. I happen to need, I can't speak for you, but I happen to need all of my oars in the water. I'm just not smart enough to be able to.
I'm dumb enough without any help. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Do not need help to dumb myself down so that I'm less capable of being rational. Thank you very much. She goes on to say, why don't the powers that be, for the better term, whether it be politicos the demons stop me from being able to share the books and from being able to broadcast on the radio. So why is it you think that all of our books except one, Prophet of Doom, has really received so many attacks that it's not currently up, although we'll get it back up one day. And it is up. It's mirrored in a lot of other sites. But other than Prophet of Doom, why is it you think that we're able to tell the truth in these books and to have this this show, although we can't get the show syndicated because of the fact that most Americans aren't just going to tolerate listening to advertising radio somebody say that they ought not salute their military or their flag.
Yeah, or say Jesus.
Or say Jesus, yes.
Yeah.
Or read a New Testament.
Well, you know, it's pretty. I think it's a simple answer. When you attack Islam, all the preachers got on your side, all the Christians got on your side, because it's kind of like, see, we're a lot better than them.
Yes.
You know, so they become the enemy, they become the communists, they become the terrorists, they become
So
whatever.
I did 3,000 interviews with almost every major radio show in America because, they didn't have any problem me saying
them, you see.
Right.
You're saying, like, Eisenhower invented the communist thing. I mean, if you, it's like they become the bad guys, so now we can attack them and the same thing.
Right.
So that's, I think that's why everybody wanted you, you know, because you're attacking them, and that promotes me. You know, if you put them down, I go up.
Right. Now, but then when I came to know that Paul was a false prophet, boy, that come to a screeching halt.
I ain't got a Christian friend in the world at the moment because of this, if I talk to him.
Right.
So they just shut right down.
Shut right down. I don't want to hear that. Or in America where patriotism is the national religion of both the left and the right, most people don't want to hear that.
And Paul already told you you're supposed to bow down to your president.
Your government, right. Yes, right. Yeah. He not only said submit to government in a letter written to Romans, which was the most vicious, when Yahweh called it the beast, he associated the Roman government with Satan. Direct correlation, Roman government with Satan. But Paul didn't only say you should submit to it. He said that God himself put that government in place for your own good. And you need to obey them.
King Iams, love that line.
Ooh. Yeah, and it's the fact is that you look at the oldest manuscripts of Romans, and it's right there. That's what Paul said.
Yes.
Yeah. So, no, it's the fact of the matter is that we will never have a large audience. Yeah, if your goal was to become a Rush Limbaugh and to have a large listener audience, it is not possible if you're going to tell the truth because the truth is unpopular. That's just the reality of it. So we will primarily be and continue to be an Internet-based program for that very reason. As for the books, they will come and go. I constantly get pushed off of websites, and it is a real challenge to keep these books up and available. Kirk, it's based on the experience I've had thus far, I am reasonably convinced that there is a limited amount of time that we'll be able to do this program, the one we'll do this afternoon or evening, depending on if you're on the East or West Coast, on Block Talk Radio on the Torah. Mm-hmm. I think it's a very limited time. And we're going to be accused of hate speech, and we will be blocked. We'll be banned. And I do think that all of the books that we've written and posted, I think they'll all be taken off. They'll be accused of hate speech, and they will be banned.
I think you're right, and in that context, and I don't want to flog a dead horse, you know, the lady's email, but the reason the government could not allow this thing to happen is a couple of fold. Number one, the truth always would set everybody free, and that, you know, they're not afraid to start wars. War doesn't scare them at all. Nuclear weapons in Russia doesn't scare them at all, but they're scared to death of a little guy that used to work for NSA and has to live now in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Because you told the facts, and you're scarier than he is.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I'm not as bright as he is. Edward Snowden is the most articulate young man that I think I've ever heard speak. He's a real hero in my eyes. And it is true that the U.S. government is absolutely just in its underwear, scared to death about him. And I do think what we're presenting on this program is far more lethal to the credibility of the U.S. government than what he has said. I think it's only a matter of time.
So the answer to her question is don't expect anybody to help you, much less not be against you. I mean, they're just going to do it, and that's why you can't. There's only so many people can hear it, and quite frankly, there's hardly anybody that wants to hear it.
And it's so easy for the powers that be to discredit an individual. It doesn't even have to be true. Probably won't be true.
Accusations
leveled by the government will be sufficient, and you know they'll accuse you of tax fraud or of some moral act of impropriety, and just like they did Julian Assange, who's still holed up in the Ecuadorian embassy in the UK. Yeah, the WikiLeaks guy, that because he was so lethal to them, they had somebody falsely accuse him of rape. Now, he didn't commit rape, but he was accused of it.
Yeah.
Deliberately to control him and to silence him. It's what's going to happen, and it's just a matter of time before it it does happen. And the only reason I think that Muslims finally, other than to bring the Prophet of Doom sight to down, but the reason they stopped putting fatwas on me and threatened me that way is the more attention they brought to Prophet of Doom, the worse it was for them. Yeah. So they just finally denial of service attack so that the book couldn't be up.
Well, the difference between us and the WikiLeaks guy and the guy and Russia is that Snowden is that we have Yahweh on our side, and
right,
we'll do it. You know, so he, and nobody can stop us till he, you know, till it's over. So
while I wouldn't like being publicly humiliated and crucified for something that I didn't even do for them to bring down to silence the voice of this program and also the books. The fact of the matter is, in the long term, does it really matter to me? No, it doesn't matter. I know how this ends up. I've got a, just like you do, I've got a ticket to live in Yano's home, and so whether you try to silence me between now and the time that 13 years from now we go on that ride and depart this planet on Tarua, or I disappear 13 years from now, it really doesn't matter. And the only thing that I think gives us some ability to continue to convey this message is that while I'm not going to speak for you, but I will speak for me. I am a extraordinarily flawed individual. And yet there are so few people who are in a position to effectively speak for Yahweh, who are willing to invest the time to get to know him, who are willing to let go of all of their prior misconceptions to embrace his testimony, and who are willing to share it, knowing that all they're going to do is that most people are going to become enemies, and 1 in 1,000 is going to say, well, that really makes sense. I'm going to respond to that and come to know Yahweh. There are so few people willing to do that, that no matter how flawed I may be, since I'm among the few, I think Yahweh supports what we're doing because we're supporting what he had to say.
Well, that's the key, because what he had to say and the fact that you put it, pen to paper, is what turned us towards him, not what you are,
right,
or what you do,
right,
you know. So,
right,
so
yeah,
once again, you've become irrelevant again.
Yes, and that's and I think a willingness to be irrelevant is what makes what qualifies you actually to communicate Yahweh's testimony. You've got to get out of the way and let him speak. And when he does, people respond. Moving back to this letter that was offered by a mother from a listener to this program. She went on to say, it is also mind-boggling to me that there is information that cannot be refuted, for example, the Torah. And there are people very much knowledgeable about the wrongs of religion, the church, Sunday, sun worship, whom are aware of all of the political and religious nonsense, but still defend the King James Version and the name of Jesus, even though they know the name Yahweh. I just can't fathom why they would do that. So why do you think that, and I know that to be true, that every pastor that I have confronted and said, why are you talking about Jesus? There's no Jesus. A name was invented in the 17th century. It's not even remotely close to the actual name, which is Yahusha. Why are you doing that? You know, there's no title Christ. Why are you using that title? You know, there's no instruction for Sunday. There's no instruction for worship, much less Sunday worship. So it's to observe the Shabbat. Why are you doing this? There's no scriptural instruction for Christmas and Easter. They're Babylonian. Why are you doing that? And every single one say, yeah, you're right. You're right. There isn't. They're all wrong. And so why? Why do you think, Kirk?
Well, you know, the only thing I can't really fathom sometimes, but our preacher, when we were Christians, he would even announce these things. He went all into the Christmas being false and Easter being false and mm-hmm. all these things. And but he was so aligned with Paul that, and he knew, he said, Sabbath is Saturday, it's always been a Saturday, but we meet on Sunday as the first day of the month because Paul said, gather this stuff to the warehouse or whatever, you know. It just went on and on and on. It, like, it didn't matter. Yes, that's the truth, but it doesn't matter because now we have a new covenant, a new deal,
right.
And that solves it all. And I was so stupid. I said, oh, okay.
And, you know, and the bottom line question here is, how can the new deal be valid if the old deal is invalid?
And how do you have a big stone thing on your church that says, for even though they use the word Lord, but
right.
forever, Yahweh, thy word is settled in heaven, meaning once he said it, it's good to go
right.
forever. And
right.
and how do you reconcile that? And when the Baptists right. have this thing where they're always talking about a sermon today on reconciling Paul with James, and you go, come on, why do you have to reconcile it? Why should there be, you know, why should
right.
there be two opposite views?
Right. Why are we trying to determine who was telling the truth, Paul or James, when if they're in conflict with one another, it can't be Scripture?
Yeah.
Well, you know, right how here? Can you have, you say this is the inerrant word of God, and they hold up their Bible, and yet the end of it, their New Testament, is in direct contradiction to the beginning of it. How can they be inerrant word of God's if they're directly contradictory?
Yeah. Our preacher stood up and said, you know, the first year of the publication of the King Ines or King James, and we had a copy of the King Ines right there in the middle of the lobby. It says
right.
King Ines right on it, which is disturbing.
Wow. Yes,
and
that is disturbing.
Even, yeah. And she would say in regards to, once again, it's all this Paul thing, you know. It's,
right.
He said, you know, there's 30,000 arrows found by the scholars, what I meant to say, in Oxford or Cambridge, who declared right after King James was published that it had 30,000 arrows in it.
Right. There was,
I mean, he was not an inerrant guy of that. He would say, okay, we're going to start with the King James because everybody's familiar with it, and we'll go into this, and we'll go into Hebrew. We had three Torahs, one from the 11th century.
Wow.
Down in the bottom in what they call the room of the book.
Wow. To so have an 11th
yeah,
century, that's the oldest Masoretic text.
I'm sorry, probably the 13th century.
Yeah, it'd have to be, because the oldest Masoretic text that has been found that is extant is the Codex Leningradus, and it's an 11th century codex, and that's the oldest extant version of the Masoretic text is 11th century. Now, the Dead Sea Scrolls, of course, you know, go back to as far as 200, 250 BCE, but you're not going to have a copy of the Dead Sea Scrolls sitting in the lobby of a Christian church. You know, they haven't released those for private purchase.
Well, he had quite a collection. I mean, he had stuff that was, you know.
So he had to be aware of the lies, and yet
he
made a living pretending to be smart while misguiding. You know, to my way of thinking, the answer to this question is the difference between knowing and understanding, between, in Hebrew, yada and bien. Yada means to know. Bien means to understand. So here's a person that had knowledge but no understanding.
He just couldn't walk away from his father. His father was a preacher, and even though he was a PhD from Stanford, you know, he was a smart man. He spoke umpteen languages. He could read Coptic as well as Hebrew and everything else, and he had to know.
Everyone that I've ever confronted knew that what they were saying was untrue. And this guy acknowledged it from the pulpit. Your pastor acknowledged it. Hey, all these things are false.
Yeah.
You know, and the amazing thing is, particularly if you can read Greek and you get a copy of the oldest manuscript of Paul's letters, there is no question, particularly Romans, that he's insane. There's no question that he's demon-possessed in 2 Corinthians. There is no question that he is combating God, that his adversary is God himself and his Torah in Galatians. So if you can read Greek and you can read Hebrew, it should be blatantly obvious that there's absolutely no possibility that Paul is trustworthy.
Now, when you're always talking about Papyrus 46 and
yes.
The early things, mm-hmm. the first, second, third, and even the early part of the fourth century.
Correct.
How does one get a hold to those? Where do you go?
Oh, that's great. Good question. There's, to my knowledge, there's only been one publication of the earliest text. In fact, it's the actual book is entitled, here it is. It's called The Text of the Earliest NT, meaning New Testament, but NT, Greek Manuscripts. The text is compiled by a fellow named Philip Comfort. And I understand that there's an electronic version of this that's part of Logos software. And while I use Logos software, I no longer recommend it. I use it in hardback. So what I do is if I want to see what's in the oldest manuscripts, is I will any passage in Greek that I'm looking at, I'll go and see in this book, and there's a reference in the beginning of the book that lists all of the books of the Christian New Testament, and it tells you what papyrus they're found on. Now, Papyrus 46 is interesting in that it has virtually all of Paul's letters. So it shows the entirety of what Paul wrote, and it only contains Paul's letters, with the exception of Hebrew, which was one of Paul's disciples that wrote Hebrews. And the other thing that's interesting is it's a very old codex. Codex means it was written on papyrus and bound together like a book. The Dead Sea Scrolls are not on papyrus. They're all on parchment, which is animal skin as opposed to the reeds. And they're all on scrolls as opposed to codexes, which is woven into a book form. So there's a huge difference between the two. And, of course, these are Greek manuscripts as opposed to Hebrew manuscripts.
Right.
But there are 69 that were unearthed prior to the overwhelming influence of Constantine, where there is almost no correlation between what was actually written and what then was presented on those manuscripts. The early Christians were revisionist. Rome became revisionist. From right around the time of Constantine for the next 100 or 200 years, if you look at Roman historians, there's almost no correlation between what they wrote and what they said and what actually happened. And they became complete revisionists. And that really created a climate where they took their revisionist tendencies to the text of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. And so you have very, particularly the New Testament, I should say, but you have very few codexes that are as close to the original author's letter or manuscript than you have with Paul in Parchment 46. Parchment 46 dates to the late 1st, early 2nd century.
Now, when did they discover those? Were they in Egypt?
Almost all of them were in Egypt. Many of them around Alexandria, but most all were scribed in Alexandria. And they're all found south of Cairo. And they're typically were in masonry jars in the walls of ruins of homes. And it's because there was a period of time where if you had one of these manuscripts, you'd be killed for it.
Uh-huh.
And so we don't have any, by the way, because the manuscripts that were in Yisrael during this period of time, like, for example, Yaokanan and Mataniah, were written in Hebrew originally. And we don't have copies of those because first the Romans and then Akiba's rabbinic Jews destroyed them. It was punishable by death to own one, and they were immediately confiscated and burned. And so, and in the area around Jerusalem, you can't do much archaeology because the Muslims have a conniption fit. So we don't have any old Hebrew manuscripts, and really all we have, all 69 pre-Constantine manuscripts of the Christian New Testament were found in Egypt.
Yeah. Well, Ed, when did they find those? Recently? I mean, the last 20 years or so, or does it go back to the 30s?
There are some that were found as far as 100 years ago, but wasn't much scholarship on them. The most have been found within the last 20 or 30 years, and the first publication of those manuscripts is in the book, The Text of the Earliest NT Greek Manuscripts. That's the first time they were published for people to use in scholarship. So it's a very, very recent phenomenon. And Philip Comfort will even begin his begins his book by saying the reason the cutoff date for of the 4th century, which means 300s, is because he says that under the influence of Constantine, there was such variation, such a free hand, such a tendency to change the text to suit the religious agenda, that it makes there is no value in the manuscripts that post-date Constantine. So his own limit was Constantine. There were 69 of them. They were all found in Egypt. And the publication of them has occurred within the last 10 to 20 years. Very new phenomenon. We'll be back in a moment. I want a couple of more thoughts on this particular letter. One of the, she ends the letter by saying, I'm so glad that you have spread the word. I pretty much keep my mouth closed now because my husband and family don't agree. They don't see it. They don't even want to see it. My children know Yahweh, much to my husband's displeasure. But it's the best I can do for now. She did say, on a side note, she says, I watched the Son of God movie purely to point out the discrepancies to my husband between what the movie presented, the truth. And she said, they actually had the character named Jesus quietly say, my name is Yahusha. It almost sounds like he's saying, my name is okay or something, but I rewound it and listened to it time and time again. Even my husband couldn't deny that he said, my name is Yahusha. Well, no matter what the movie says, his name is Yahusha. And if you don't know his name, you do not know him. Yeah. Would you agree that it's I would go all the way to the point to say that if you're using the name Jesus and or Jesus Christ, that there is a 0% possibility that you actually know who he is and was.
I don't think you certainly don't know the totality of it. You might know a little bit about him, but a little bit of knowledge doesn't mean you know him personally.
Right. That's right. That's my point. You do not know him personally. Your relationship is with a character developed by men, a caricature, as opposed to the real individual if you don't know his name. Because his name defines who he is and what he's doing. And if you don't know who he is Yahweh, and what he's doing, saving us, then I don't think it's possible to know him.
No. You know, last week when you did the translation a little bit from the Revelations, and then I looked up several translations, and one of them says that, he loves Philadelphia because of they know my name and they observe my Torah. It doesn't serve my word, but
my word.
It was but his word is his Torah, and his Torah is his word, and Yahusha is his word. I mean, so come on. But he knows, that should shake you up if you don't want to use his name.
Absolutely.
You don't want to observe his Torah.
Right.
I mean, it's in your book. Just because they translated it wrong, go look it up.
Yeah.
That wasn't hard for me.
Yeah. And while they're not, and by the way, and they're not talking about Yahusha's name.
No, they're talking about
Yahusha. They're talking about Yahweh's name. And Yahweh's name is the only name that matters. Yahusha is simply Yahweh in the doing what he has promised to do, which is saving us. The Savior is not Yahusha, it's Yahweh.
Yes.
And
Yahweh's the one coming back.
And Yahweh's the one coming back. Yes, exactly.
Who's coming at for you. Yeah.
Exactly. Go ahead. Oh, I was going to say this.
Go ahead. I'll beg your pardon.
No, I'm going to let you conclude your thought.
No, it's just my wife wanted me to tell her the story, a little brief story. We had a student, and her father-in-law was a preacher, and she, in a conversation with him, he told her why he became a preacher, And he said, well, I was a vacuum cleaner salesman, and I thought I could sell Jesus and make a whole lot more money, or I could, you know, it's an easier life. So some of the motive, and you must have known an awful lot of preachers along the way, and most of those probably were not brilliant and impressed you tremendously on their intellect or their abilities. They can sell this. Now, I'm sure the guy believed the story was true. I wouldn't, it's like his belief in his vacuum cleaners, but that was his motive, you know.
Exactly. No, as I was, when I was an ordained ruling elder in the Presbyterian Church and served in the role of determining what pastors would be paid, I quickly learned that they do it because they want to be paid, and that their primary motivation is how much they're paid. That's the reality. When a pastor stands up there and tells, let's make your tithes and our offerings, it's because it goes to him and his place of work. It's all about getting paid. And that's the difference, by the way. If you look at Yahweh's priests, and if you look at Yahweh's disciples, one thing you find is common. They were not paid.
Yeah.
They were never paid. Yahweh's never had a paid clergy, ever. And Yahweh's disciples were not paid.
You know the old joke about the preacher gets an offer from another church, a big offer for money, and he goes down to his study to pray, but his wife goes upstairs and starts packing?
Yeah, I'm going to go pray about that. I know the outcome of this one. Yeah. Oh, my.
Thanks for letting me take up so much of your time. I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. I've enjoyed the conversation all the way through. It's been a wonderful week. It a lot of interesting stories, many of which were unexpected as we began the week. But I look forward to those of you who will join us as we do the Torah program tonight. May Yah bless you all.